Have you been listening to the podcast and getting value from the show? If so, I've got a small favor to ask, because over the next few months, we're going to be making some changes to better serve you. Now, I could keep creating episodes based on what I think would be most helpful, but I would much rather get this right. So instead of guessing, I want to understand where you are right now and the real challenges you, your organization, and your team are facing. That's why I've put together a very short 90-second survey. It'll help me better understand you and how I can serve you at a much higher level. And as a thank you, the first 30 people who complete it will receive a free signed copy of one of our books. To take part, just go to the show notes and click the link titled Leadership Survey. Or you can go directly to letsgrowleaders.com/podsurvey. PODSURVEY. It'll take less than 2 minutes. I really appreciate your input. It will genuinely help shape the future of the show.
It's that internal place that really is the sorting function for am I in integrity or not, or a whole lot of other decisions. Like what takes a leader from good to exceptional really is that internal compass of knowing what's right.
Hey, it's David. And you're listening to Leadership Without Losing Your Soul, your source for practical leadership inspiration, tools, and strategies you can use to achieve transformational results without sacrificing your humanity or your mind in the process. Hey, everyone, welcome to the show. What are we in? This is season 17, episode 4, our 265th episode, and I am so glad that you're here for it. We are going to be getting rid of some outdated leadership practices today with our guest, and it's the 21st century, so why train leaders like it's 1980? I mean, 1980 was a good year for music, but maybe not a great year for leadership training. At least that's my story. I'm going to stick to that. So we're going to get into some specific outdated thinking, things we need to let go of that might still be affecting your leadership development perspective. We're going to also get some tips on how you can coach yourself and your leaders to be as effective as they can be in today's era with the leadership that we all need. So to help us with all of that, I want to welcome to the show our guest today. Our guest is Lori Maison, and a distinguished 25-year executive coach who has provided tens of thousands of coaching sessions to top leaders from Fortune 100 CEOs to venture-backed startup executives. She's the co-founder, president, and chief coaching officer of Sounding Board Inc., which offers a tech-driven, human-centric approach to leadership development. And they've done work with all kinds of folks that you would recognize. And she also, just this past fall, has a book out called Leadership Revolution, The Future of Developing Dynamic Leaders. And I certainly saw myself in this book just as in the opening pages. So I'm eager to discuss it with you. Lori Maison, welcome to the show. It's a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you. Happy to be here, David.
All right. Well, we're going to dive into the leadership revolution and what are these outdated ways of thinking and what should we be doing now and so forth. But before we do any of that, Lori, I wanted to ask you if you could take us back in your own memory, however far you want to your earliest memory or one of your earliest memories of yourself as a leader.
Oh my gosh. You know, this is going to probably be very funny. I think one of my earliest memories of myself as a leader was when I was about 9 or 10, and I wanted to do something in the summer. So I decided to set up a little school for all the kids in the neighborhood, and I set myself up as the teacher of that group. And what's really funny is I have a picture from those days. And as the teacher of the neighborhood school, I was wearing roller skates. So I thought that was pretty cool. Maybe all teachers should wear roller skates. But I would say that's probably my earliest, like running the neighborhood school during the summer.
I love that story so much. And as a fellow person who, as a child, set up school for other kids and was the teacher. Yeah, but you have me beat because I was not wearing roller skates. I love that. You're right. We should have roller schools or something.
Yeah, for sure. Maybe we should wear them around the office too, probably.
Yeah, well, just make sure we got the right floors for it. There was a, you just reminded me of a tech office that I was in Denver, and this is many years ago now, but they did have some folks wearing roller skates as a, and roller blades, I think, if I'm
not being surprised. Yeah. I mean, I'll say another thing about my early leadership experience as well is my father was actually a presidential appointee under Nixon. And I was able to go to a lot of White House events when I was like a preteen and watch the whole leadership goings on there, and saw that whole thing all the way through the Watergate situation. And it was very instructive to my very early thinking about leadership.
What an education that must have been.
Yeah, I was kind of like a fly on the wall as a child, watching all of that.
Wow, I can't even imagine. Well, with that preface about who you were in your early days as a leader, some of the early things that you were doing from a teaching, what you were learning, obviously watching all of the ins and outs and the integrity and everything else, all of those have followed through today to help you be the person you are. And the book you've written, Leadership Revolution, The Future of Developing Dynamic Leaders. I mentioned in the introductory comments that I really saw myself in some of these opening pages. And one of my early memories of myself in the business leadership context was doing exactly something that you said, we need to not do that. And it was so funny. It was I'm an introvert. I have a calmer demeanor in my interactions with people. And of course, you know, as a early 20 something, learn so much about, you know, leadership, and you see all these charismatic, inspirational speeches and all this kind of stuff. And when I tried to do it, it just fell so flat, and people were looking at me quizzically, like, "What is your problem?"
Yeah, you
know, it's a very early lesson in. The common way of looking at things is not always an accurate way of looking at things. And you've got a lot of those for us, some of those things we need to discard. So let's jump into this when we're talking about some of these ways of thinking and why we need a revolution in how we approach leadership. Let's start there at the 50,000 foot level, then we'll dive in and get more detail.
Sure. So why do we need a revolution? Because we're still, as you stated in your intro, you know, we're still training leaders like the last century, and the workplace and work environment and economic environment, business environment is so drastically different than it was in the 70s, 80s, 90s, that even just looking at that, you have to just intuitively know if you're training leaders to operate like it's 1987, it's not going to be very effective right now. So that's the basic premise. The example you raised was the first thing that I think we should let go of, that there's one way to be a leader. And in the last century, because most of the leaders were white males, actually in the first 10 years of my coaching practice, I only coached men, because that was the only people who were in the executive positions. And because of that, there's sort of a one way people think you need to be a leader. And you named a component of it, which is like you have to be Elon Musk, you know, you have to be a charismatic leader. But if that were the case, every leader would be out there verbalizing all their thoughts to the world. And you don't see that many people doing that. So that just lets you know that there's lots of ways to be a successful leader. And being charismatic can be one of the ways if that's natural to you. But if it's not natural to you, it comes across very fake and doesn't generate trust. So the key is being the leader who you are more naturally, and then developing your capacities and capabilities so that you become really the best leader you can be. And that's going to look very different than any other leader out there on the planet. If there was one way, everyone would just do it and we'd all be successful, but it's just not that easy.
And I'm curious how you parse out the difference between the way that we lead, the mannerism, the personality we bring, our best self, all those sorts of things, and the and some of the components that you could argue like are consistent to effective leaders, like maybe underlying principles or things. How do you tease those? I like it. Let's take an obvious one, like integrity or something like that, that that is important for building trust and all that. So what's the distinction in your mind?
The distinction is really a being doing distinction. Like there's who you are as an individual, as a person, and then there's what you're doing. So capabilities, leadership capabilities are really the what you are doing part of it. You are strength thinking strategically. You know, you are enabling high performing teams. That's the what you are doing, but the how is more your own personality, your own thinking. And that gets into the capacity model, the core of which is like an internal compass or something internal, an internal locus of control that helps you with things like integrity. So if you're getting all of your satisfaction externally, you're going to be pulled to make decisions by external inputs. And if you're getting your satisfaction internally because you know you're doing a good job or you know you're having impact, then that locus of control is going to be more internal. And it's that internal place that really is the sorting function for am I in integrity or not, or a whole lot of other decisions. Yeah, so absolutely. If you're going to talk about like what takes a leader from good to exceptional, it really is that internal compass, that internal sense of knowing what's right.
All right, excellent. So the distinction between being and doing, so vital. I want to go back to, you mentioned in some of these, the ways of thinking that we need to set aside because they don't serve us anymore. They're not accurate. So one of them you started with, there's just one way to lead and one way to be and how we're doing those things. What are some of the other outmoded ways of thinking about leadership that continue to persist that you're still seeing that we need to set aside?
Yeah, I'll say my second one, which is like a hot topic for me, that skills are enough. So you just see every cycle, it's a new reskilling, upskilling. We have skill development practice platforms, everything about skill development. And, you know, there's a lot of, quote, skilled leaders out there. That does not mean they are ready to operate in an environment that is spending a lot of time in the unknown or is unpredictable or is very diverse, or some of the things that is, you know, hybrid workplace. The basic concept is skills are not enough. Skill training actually came out of OSHA in like the 70s and then became the way companies up-level their folks. And one reason is, especially with online learning, it's cheap. And you can scale it to a lot of people, but only about 10% of skill training actually translates to any individual's daily work life. That's a very low transfer of learning number. And when you're talking the kind of complexity that leaders have to deal with today, just having individual skills just isn't enough to do that.
And Lauren, can you clarify what you mean by skill training in this context?
Yeah, it might be listening skills, conflict management skills, right? Any of the basic skill sets, and surprisingly, many companies do a much more functional approach, like skills for product managers or something like that. Mm-hmm. So we call that horizontal development. It does progress people in their functional area as well. And as early training, you got to have skills. So we're not dissing skills. You need them. They're just not enough as right. You start to go up the leadership ranks. Skill sets are very tangible. And as you go up the leadership ranks, things become more and more intangible the higher you go up in the house. So you need what we call vertical development, not just the skills, but how do you combine those skills with your own authentic approach and apply those in situations maybe you've never faced before, right? Now we're talking something that's very contextual, that's individualized, that's really customized for that particular situation. And you're never going to be able to learn that in an online skill training.
Makes me remember a conversation with a direct report I had many years ago. His name was John, very talented leader. He's a chief operating officer now. And I remember very early in his career, like 7 or 8 months in, I think he was completed some skill development. And I remember him asking, it was meeting a kind of in a mentorship capacity. He said, you know, is this all there is? And I was like, no. you learn these skills as a foundation that you then build on to go do all of the other things.
Right. So skills are great for foundation building, but surprisingly companies use skills as the be all and end all. And there isn't a lot in addition to that. Okay. So the complexity of the environment, you know, the environment's changed really a lot since the last century. And one of the big changes is it used to be like 20-year trajectory to develop as a leader because you stayed at the company 20, 30 years, maybe your whole career. Now, you know, people are changing jobs on average every 3 to 3.5 years, leaders more 4 to 5 years. And so you have to accelerate the leader development or you're not going to have a pipeline of leaders ready to take on, you know, each successive level in the organization. And you have to do that more quickly. So that's why the more personalized, contextual vertical development is critical.
Okay, so we are setting aside that there's just one way to lead. We're setting aside that skill training is sufficient. And there's the other things that we need for all the reasons that you just elaborated. What is another of these mindsets or beliefs that doesn't serve us that it's time to set aside?
Yeah, I would say the third one is 360 feedback. That's also been around for the last 50 years. And it's skills, it's not terrible. It could give maybe a little bit of information, but people spend a lot of time and money on it thinking it's going to have a large impact, and it isn't going to. And the reason it isn't, it's point in time. There is a large bias to the most recent activities that have happened when you're filling those forms out. So a recency bias. And it's because it's the person's interpretation of the language, it's a perception management kind of situation. So you don't know if someone's saying team player, what that means to the person filling out the survey. And what that means to the leader may not be the same thing at all. So it's very hard to translate that quote data, which is subjective data, into action or activity that's actually going to help you become a better leader.
Using the phrase that you just suggested, you know, if there's a question, are they a team player? Boy, that makes me cringe because of just how much that can mean to different people. Even to a specific individual, it may mean something that isn't actually effective or healthy for them. So getting more specific in our language there, yeah. All right, so let's go to number four. What's number four?
And a next door neighbor of 360 feedback, performance evaluations. So there's so much research that shows performance evaluations take a lot of time, a lot of money, and have virtually no positive impact. People do not like to do them. Again, it's point in time. It has a lot of bias. And it's not even utilized to make proportional decisions, which is the original idea. And a very interesting thing happened in the late 2000s up to around 2010. Companies started giving up the standard ratings and performance evaluations. Even companies like the former GE, who were, you know, very big proponents of it. And then by 2015, people were taking them back up again. And I'm like, oh no, don't take up those old things. But I think it's because there really wasn't an alternative. And so one of the things from a leadership perspective is trying to create more alternatives to the standard old style performance evaluation. Like those ratings literally are 50 years old.
And so, Laura, I know that, and I have fought this fight myself over the years in different capacities and things. And I know that for folks listening, if you are not the chief human resource officer or CEO of your organization or in some place like that to have active decision-making authority, and you're having to deal with performance evaluations, anything that we can do to make them more useful or less harmful or to be more effective in our leadership.
Yeah, I do think there's kind of a mindset that you could take, which is instead of the authoritarian mindset where like I'm the manager and I'm evaluating that employee, I could take the mindset, it's my job along with the employee to make that employee successful. And if I think of it that way, my feedback's going to be feedback that helps them grow and develop, that helps them be successful, versus feedback that is, you know, maybe demoralizing or hard to swallow. And I think some of those questions that could be had in the performance conversation could be around like, how well am I understanding what my job function is? How well am I prepared for that? How much alignment do I have with my employee that we're actually both on the same page around that? So we could have a much deeper conversation, even if we're using the standard, you know, forms and format. And I call that an alignment conversation, because when myself and my employee, myself as a leader and my employee are both thinking the same thing and on the same page, the chances of that employee being successful is greatly increased.
Absolutely. Some very, very useful human-centered leadership questions for listeners of the show that you've got different skills and different ways of approaching those. All right, Laurie, if I'm counting correctly, we've got four so far, and I believe you have five, if I remember correctly, five of these notions that we need to set aside.
I can give you one more, which is another one that also kind of drives me crazy, and it's the 9-box talent review.
You're taking all the sacred cows and throwing them out.
I really am, because that also, it was developed in the last century. It is a grid that identifies people's performance, which could be somewhat objective, but the other thing it identifies is people's potential. And this was designed again when the work environment was much more homogeneous, both in terms of diversity and also in terms of generations. And it actually asks leaders to determine someone's potential. And you have to know right away that that's going to come through the view of the individual person. And it is subjective. And the 9-box has been shown again in research to not be objective. And yet companies still use that to determine who they are going to promote. And there has to be something different than just myself as a leader determining people's potential. Like that's an inside internal thing for the individual. And I may or may not be able to see that from the outside. And I can put my biases on that around what potential looks like. And often that looks like something that fits for one slice of the population, but not for others.
Yeah. In maybe not defense, but in the implementations I have seen organizations do with Ninebox, where they're trying, and I understand why, like you're saying, why do we do this? Why, and what's the alternative? You know, when people are doing it better, maybe it can't be done well, but if people are doing it better, they're calibrating and they're getting multiple viewpoints and they're not just relying on one perspective because of all of the reasons that you just said. And yet, like you said, potential is an inside game. So it's always, even if you have five people who are calibrated or 10 diverse people looking at it, you still don't know because that's...
Well, I know. And why wouldn't you just ask the individual whose potential it is, you know, what they are thinking?
Yeah.
Right? It's like, sure, other people's perspective, but why not get the one who knows what's on the inside?
Mm-hmm. The, you know, and part of those development conversations that we ought to be having with our folks is about where do they want to go? Where do they see themselves? What do they think they need to be working on? And certainly we can have some perspective, some objective perspective that can help them with that, or some coaching questions to ask along the way, coaching with
yes.
a small C,
yes.
To help along the way and that sort of thing. So let's transition from some of these things that aren't working. Let's start talking about what is needed today, because one of the things that you get at in the setup for this book is that the kind of leadership that we need today. So you mentioned leadership development needs to be a lot faster and more rapid than it has been. But there's also the fact that we are dealing with a workplace, an environment, a world that requires a lot more flexibility, nimbleness, ability to confront rapidly changing circumstances than leaders yes. in previous generations, maybe depending on their industry, have faced. And that's becoming much more the norm. So what is it we ought to be doing from a leadership development perspective that can work to help us be effective and produce those leaders, either to get there ourselves or the leaders that we are helping to bring up?
Mm-hmm. So my big plug is going to be for executive style coaching. And one of the reasons is, even since the last century, that's been used for the folks at the top of the house, right? And it was offered kind of behind closed doors in the early days. But executives have found that to be very developmental for them for quite a few years now, at least about 20 years, maybe a little more. And yet they haven't been willing to provide that for the up and coming leaders. And what's really interesting is all of the execs and CEOs that I have coached said, I wish I had this earlier in my career. Yes, it's useful now, but it would have also been very useful when I was coming up the ranks. And I think one reason coaching hasn't been as widely deployed is just because the cost, because it started in the C-suite, you know, it's been very expensive. It, you know, provided really great living for me as an executive coach. But that price point then just made it not easy to spread out among all the leaders in an organization. So that's actually why I started a company, Sounding Board, that really the whole point was to scale coaching to all leaders in an organization. And to do that, we use technology platform to bring the price point down so it could be deployed much more widely.
And so in that coaching relationship and in the growing of diverse leadership pipelines and with the contextual development, all the things you're talking about beyond just the skills, what are some of the critical things that coaching is going to help to cultivate? And one of the things I'm going to put some context on this. One of the things I'm looking off screen at your book here on my other monitor that I appreciate mm-hmm. about your book is that every chapter ends with coach. And then you've got a series of questions that a coach can ask to help draw that out and help people to develop their being and thinking and so forth. And you know, I saw them as valuable too for questions that you can even ask yourself from a self-coaching perspective. So what are the topics? Right. What are the kinds of things that people should be thinking about looking at in in this development that go beyond the skill training and so forth?
Yeah, one of my favorite concepts is this idea of the big leap. We use that from a coaching context in the very first session with a leader. We identify what that person's big leap is in terms of their leadership development. And the reason we use a big leap is because we don't have time for baby steps. If you have 20 years, you can have a much more moderated step-by-step approach. But the current environment, it doesn't allow that. And so people need to make a leap. And there's some research that shows that 90% of the most senior leaders aren't confident that the leaders below them are prepared to take their jobs. So that right there shows we have to make a bigger leap. One thing that's really interesting from the coaching perspective is if, as a coach, I ask that leader, what's your big leap? They often don't know. But to the coach, it's actually very visible from the outside, and the coach then can help that leader identify their big leap. And it often has to do with next level thinking. If I'm a manager and I'm only thinking about my own team, now I need to level up my thinking so that I'm thinking cross-functionally. You know, if I'm a VP or maybe a senior director, and now I'm going to have responsibility much more broadly in the company, I have to up-level my thinking to a different point of view. So coaches become kind of like a thinking partner for that leader, helping them scale up their own thinking to the next level, and then applying the behaviors and actions that match with that new level of thinking.
I'm curious when you're talking about that new level of thinking, and if I'm sitting here listening and going, okay, my company doesn't have a coaching program for somebody at my level. Maybe I can ask for that, but I want to develop this new level of thinking that you're talking about, Lori. Like, that's, I clearly understand it's important. I get it. What can I start to do? What are some practical first steps I can take in that direction myself right now?
Well, I'll give a little plug for Sounding Board's new product, which allows for leaders to sign up independently for Sounding Board coaching. And it is true, many companies provide coaching only either for selected cohorts or at a certain level. So if you're not one of the selected people, this goes back to the potential thing. Why would you let your company decide your potential? If you think you have the potential, then you can join Sounding Board yourself and start to get that leveling up. But let's say for whatever reason you aren't doing that, I would say one of the first steps would be to talk to the next level leaders above you and find out how they think about things. And I'll give kind of a small example, but I think it's one every leader knows who's come up the ranks, which is when you become a first-time manager, one of the hardest things to change in your thinking is around delegation. And it's just very tempting to hold on to way too much because the thinking is, I have to get this done and I can do it better than any of these other people, so I'll just do it so it gets done. But that's not the right thinking for a manager. That's individual contributor thinking. I have to do it myself to get it done. And so helping that person shift their thinking to a more managerial perspective, which is going to be more like, I need to get this done through and with my team. And then helping them buy into that thinking, because believe me, that's a pretty hard shift for folks. And then once they buy in, attaching the behaviors that are actually make them successful to the thinking. And then that lasts over time because now you have no cognitive dissonance between your thinking and your behaviors, right? If you have, yeah, I know delegation's important, but you don't really believe that, then you, when there's a crunch, when you're under stress, you're not going to delegate. You're going to go back to whatever your belief and thinking is suggesting to you.
Absolutely.
So start changing your thinking is really the first step.
And I love that process of going to the next level of leaders in the organization and investigate their thinking. I'm wondering if you have, because if someone were to come to me and say, how do you think about this? Gosh, I'd really have to think about how I think about it. Are there some, and it might be hard to draw that out initially. I'm wondering if there are any questions that you have found effective or that you equip leaders with to go and ask those questions to discover how somebody thinks about something.
Yeah, your point is really well taken, especially the higher you go up, it starts to become more innate. So it may be harder for people to talk about it. But I think almost the question you said is a good way to go, which is point out a specific event maybe that you noticed, like, oh, I saw it in this staff meeting, you did XYZ. You know, how are you thinking about that? You actually want to ask the question, how are you thinking about that? And they might struggle to come up with how they're thinking about that, but that conversation actually can be valuable to both parties because it's also helpful to the more senior leader to identify how are they thinking about that. And by the way, as an operator myself, I ask that question to the folks who report to me all the time. Like, okay, some big project's coming up and I want to know not necessarily what is the result. Of course, that's there. But like, how are you thinking about it? How are you thinking that is going to get done? I want to know their thinking process. And then if we adjust and align on their thinking process, now I can just let them go operate on their own because my thinking and their thinking align. Now just go do it. But if they are not thinking about it the same way I am thinking about it now, you know, it gets divergent right away.
And that alignment may mean both of you shift your thinking. It doesn't just mean it's one person is one way or the other because somebody might be thinking about it very differently than the way I was, but oh, wow. Yeah, that's a great way to think about it. Or sometimes, yeah, no, that is a great way to think about it.
Yeah, exactly. So when you talk about how you're thinking about things, both parties can develop and learn from that conversation. Excellent. But it's funny, I just don't see that conversation in the workplace that often. We're very kind of results oriented and we forget to explore our thinking about things, which really is the piece that's going to lead to the outcome.
Absolutely. And it's, you know, I know people will say, gosh, where do I have time for that? Well, you're having one-on-ones, you're having conversations of some kind anyway. That's a great developmental conversation that goes in both directions. So real practical takeaway here to ask, how are you thinking about that in every direction? And you're learning, they're learning, we're all learning. Lori, where can we I've got more, another question for you, but I want to highlight something else in the book, but where can we connect with you, learn more? You've mentioned your company, you know, where should we go?
Yeah, you can go to www.soundingboardinc.com to just hear about the general work of Sounding Board. You can also go to that website /leadershiprevolution. To purchase the book. And if you want some coaching for yourself, and by the way, many companies provide education funds that then you can utilize for coaching, you can go to the same website, soundingboardinc.com/accelerate, and sign up for your own coaching.
All right. Again, the name of the book is Leadership Revolution, The Future of Developing Dynamic Leaders. And our guest today is Lori Mazin. And Lori, I want to make sure we get to this. What chapter was this? Chapter 7 had a phrase that I loved, the third right answer, which that really spoke to me. So I wanted to make sure we talk about, I think this is a critical, you know, when we're talking about nimbleness, flexibility, ways of thinking, all of this. And it's a good one, I think, for us to end on that hints at so much more of the content that's in your book. So when we're talking about the third right answer, what is that? Why is it important to be thinking about this?
I don't know if it's just human nature or it's the nature of business, but we tend to go towards either or options. We can do A or we can do B. And those options often are kind of the top of mind options. And they are the options that are kind of there from our past experience. So given how different everything is now, drawing from some of those past experience things that work may not be very successful now. And so the third right answer is looking beyond the binary. It's beyond either or, to something that may not be as top of mind, that may not have been what you've done in the past, but is something potentially new and innovative that will work in the new environment that we're facing. And it takes a little effort to go past those first two options. But I found very often I don't like the A or B choice. Like, wait a minute, neither A nor B is really going to get us where we want to go. So then what's the third right answer? Those first two aren't wrong. They've worked before. They might work to a degree. But let's try to get the third right answer that actually is going to take us farther towards the impact that we desire than either of the first two.
And so I have to ask, are there fourth, fifth, and sixth right answers as well?
I sometimes think there are. Not every time, but there are often, I think, fourth and fifth right answers.
Yeah. So the purpose of the question is, hey, let's take a look at for a third right answer is really to broaden and expand, to reframe, to, you know, look at, okay, what are alternative ways of achieving this outcome that we're talking about?
Right. And I think just more creative ways as well.
So are there any, once again, taking this a level deeper, any specific questions that you have found helpful that in your coaching of leaders, or that they can ask again of themselves or their teams as they're looking for these third right answers and trying to widen the playing field of ideas?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that often comes out of an observation, which is like, seems like neither of the first two options are really going to get you what you want, or you're not really excited about, or not motivated. You know, what would be another approach that you would be motivated around, or that you really think is going to get you what you want? So just pushing them beyond that binary thinking. And you can kind of tell, like, people be A or B, you know, it kind of sounds like this, I guess I'll take B. Like, it's not a strong feeling, but if you keep going, what else could you do? What would be a different approach to this, you know? Then you'll get something where you see the energy come behind it, where they're like, oh yeah, I could do that. That would be really interesting. And often it requires just breaking through that barrier around what people think they can do, yeah. Right? A little like you said before, my company is still doing this and that's the way it is. But then there's still the question about what can I do given that? It doesn't mean I just have to default to something that's not effective or helpful or useful. Even in that context, even with limitations, there's like, whoa, what could I do differently here? What could I do that hasn't been done before? What could I do that would get me farther to what I want than either A or B?
All questions that help you break out of the rut and the automatic kind of conditioned response and our those neural pathways that are well trodden and just will run things until we break out of them. So
habitual, you know, they like habits. So they like to think, their brains like to think the same way over and over again. And we have to push our brains to think of something new.
Yes, we do. And it's, you know, in fairness to our brains, they're trying to conserve energy that we desperately needed years ago. Now maybe we have a little extra to devote to this, right? So, all right, yeah. We've gotten some real practical ways to go about this leadership revolution. First, discarding some of the ways of thinking that aren't serving us anymore, and then investing in our leadership development in more meaningful, contextual ways. We're not just stopping with skill development getting the coaching we need, looking for different ways of going about that, including the solution that Sounding Board Inc. that Lori made available to you. We've got specific questions to ask the people on your teams to help them expand their thinking and much more. So Lori, thank you so much for being a guest today on Leadership Without Losing Your Soul.
Oh, thank you. Completely my pleasure.
All right. Well, listener, you have a number of different ways to go about this, a number of practical takeaways here. One of my favorites, I think, was ask the people who are leading in levels above you how they think about what they're doing and be the leader you'd want your boss to be.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.